Welcome back to Passive Income Pilots, everyone. Tate Duryea, Ryan Gibson here. How's it going, Ryan?
I am in the mood of giving knowledge and information and giving some of my wealth that I build. I already give my time that I build to a lot of different organizations. I serve on a lot of boards, actually, and I give back and I give to my community. And I am excited to bring on Jenny Spradling, who's going to talk about freewill.com, who is someone that I know personally here in the Seattle community, who has built an awesome business around setting up a free will, right? Help you with your estate planning. Literally, you can go to our site and you can sign up for a free will. And at the end of the show, if you listen all the way to the end, we're going to give you an amazing tax tip that's going to blow your mind. You got to wait to the end, though.
That's right.
Amazing tax tip to blow your mind to save money on taxes, because I know that everyone's probably got something they want to donate or give, and please listen to the show. It's going to help you save more in taxes and give more to the charities that you care about. So go for it.
We've talked a lot about trust and estate planning on the show so far, mainly focused on trusts, right? And, you know, we've heard it from everybody that it's not just a trust, it's a trust and a will. Jenny's built an incredible website, really doing an incredible service to the world and offering estate planning for free to those who need it, whether it's yourself, your parents, just incredible. And then also marrying it with charitable giving, with a whole database of nonprofits or whatever a nonprofit you want to bring to the platform. It was just a very, very impactful conversation.
That's awesome. Yeah. And, you know, I know that as pilots, as we sort of get this wealth and we start to make more money and we start to get our dream jobs, you know, think about giving. You know, it's really important to give back to our communities. This is how the world continues. It makes you feel great. And, you know, but, you know, also the other thing too, is this is not just about giving money and donating to charity and where does my money go when I die? This also is really important for when you're on your deathbed or something happens or you're sick or, you know, who gets access to what. Like, this is your flight plan for your life.
Yes.
And this is a free service, right? So if you have parents, if you don't have one for yourself, this is something you can literally knock out. And what's crazy is at the end, Jenny talks about this. It takes 30 minutes. The average user takes 30 minutes to build a will on her site because she has it dialed. She knows exactly what you need to ask. She makes it simple answers. This is like TurboTax for wills, right?
Exactly.
But except it's free. Yeah.
Yes, precisely. So with that, I'm excited to get to the conversation.
Let's get into it.
Welcome to Passive Income Pilots, where pilots upgrade their money. This is the definitive source for personal finance and investment tactics for aviators. We interview world-renowned experts and share these lessons with the flying community. So if you're ready for practical knowledge and insights, let's roll.
Jenny, welcome to the show. So grateful to have you come on and talk about who you are and this business that you started providing people with free wills. Welcome.
Thanks. So happy to be here.
Yeah. Well, why don't you just go ahead and give listeners a little bit of background about who you are and kind of how you started the business that you have and the service that you provide people.
Yeah, happy to. So I'm the co-founder and co-CEO of a company called Freewill. We started the company almost a decade ago now. And for all consumers in all 50 states, we really provide a free and super easy way to get your estate planning done. So wills, healthcare directives, financial powers of attorney, beneficiary designations, you can get that done in all 50 states for free on our site. And you might ask, okay, well then how do you make money? You're a business, right? The way that we make money is that we white label these tools and make more complicated estate planning available for financial institutions, nonprofits, other organizations that want to sponsor more complicated estate planning for folks. And just a great thing that we get to do as a byproduct of having that profitable business is we get to offer estate planning for free to any individual who needs it across the 50 states. And this is super important now because estate planning in the US is not done very much, much less than you would expect. And especially with the great wealth transfer coming, there's a big demographic shift where baby boomers control a lot of wealth and they're going to be deciding where that goes in their estate plans. It turns out 50% of baby boomers don't have any estate planning in place. So being able to help solve that access problem is a big part of what we do.
Well, this is why I was excited to bring you on, because I know a lot of our listeners, you know, most of our listeners are airline pilots. they probably have access to some type of free will or some kind of reimbursable expense through their airline. But I know a lot of their parents, you know, are baby boomers or maybe a little older generation, and they may have not gone through this estate planning. And I'm sure our listeners are listening to the show and saying, I really want my parents to make sure that they have a will in place. And now you're just taking that friction out of it because you are offering this service for free. And so, you know, I think that's just so great. And the other thing I really loved is I kind of joked with you before the show, like it's like a, you almost provide like an API connection to the place that the holder of the estate is going to send their heirs or their, you know, their designations to. And so those donations almost flow a little bit seamlessly. Can you kind of talk about that a little bit? I mean, I think I got that right. Did I kind of explain that in a way that makes sense?
Yeah, totally. So the way we work is a lot kind of like TurboTax does for taxes. So we do that for estate planning. So it's a really easy online flow that anyone can access from the comfort of their own home. We never ask for credit card information. We never ask for sensitive information. It just allows anyone to have access to estate planning. So that's first. The second thing is we make sure that in these tools, there's no legalese, right? You don't have to be a legal expert to be able to use these tools. We really make it simple for anyone to understand. So much so that we frequently get reviews from people who are English as a second language or immigrants who are using this tool and still able to understand everything that is in it. So we've designed it to be so user-friendly for everyone. So that's the second piece. And then the third piece is, as you're going through the flow, it's going to ask you a series of questions, very similar to what a lawyer would ask you, to help you figure out what belongs in your final estate planning documents. Some of those questions include charitable giving. That's what you're kind of alluding to, Ryan. So many folks are generous and want to give a piece of their estate to charity. And it turns out, while not everyone can or wants to do this, a pretty high percentage on our platform do. So it's something like 15% of our users will give money to charity. And this ends up being a huge number. We're actually the biggest provider of estate planning now in the US. We've done over 1.4 million estate plans for folks in the US.
Wow.
And they have left almost $14 billion to charities, which is a shocking amount. And we are just so happy to see that That's level amazing. Of generosity. And the amazing thing that we see too is it's not just super rich people who are leaving money to charities. These are folks who maybe bought a house in the 60s, their house has appreciated a lot, and they're willing to just give 5 or 10% of that house away to a charity when they pass away. The rest goes to their family. And that ends up being a really big number. In fact, the average charitable gift in our estate plans is almost $60,000. So it's a huge deal to the charities that get them, even though it's just like a small piece of the typical estate plan.
Jenny, I want to hear more about your background. You said you started this a decade ago and you look fairly young.
Thank you.
What got you into this? You must have been, was this like right out of college that you started this? I mean, what brought you into this world? What attracted you to it? Like, what made you so passionate about estate planning?
Yeah, that's a great question. So Freewill is actually my second company. So I'm a serial entrepreneur and have always been really interested in financial access. My first company that I started, Paribus, with a couple friends, they actually went on to start the credit card company Ramp, which is a big credit card company now, was helping people get access to price protection refunds. So what this is like you go to Old Navy, you buy jeans, you feel super happy about it. And then the next week, those jeans go on sale for like 40% less than what you bought them for. And you're like, oh, that's so annoying. And what Paribus did is it would actually just track all of your email receipts that were getting sent to you automatically through these retailers. And it would just automatically apply for those price protection refunds and it would get you that money back. And you didn't need to lift a finger. So it would just do everything automated for you. And this was kind of in the early days of what's called OCR, meaning computers being able to read receipts and things like that to be able to like figure this out. So that was really cool.
That was like pre-AI too. So that's even more impressive.
Yeah. So this is like on the very early edge. So this was just a couple years out of college. And at the time, I actually never thought of myself as an entrepreneur. I come from an immigrant family. You know, my parents moved here right after the Cultural Revolution from China. And they were like, just find a stable job, like go to college, climb the corporate ladder. Please, dear God, do not start a company. That sounds like a terrible idea. And luckily, I was working on this on the side of a real job, a real corporate job, and it worked out really well. And I think that I kind of needed that confidence boost to get over my own imposter syndrome to say like, hey, I actually can be an entrepreneur. This is something that people like me can be successful at, even though I didn't grow up like being obsessed with lemonade, you know, selling lemonade or anything like that. So that was my first foray into entrepreneurship. And I loved it. I loved the building. I loved getting to create something that wasn't there before. And I knew I wanted to apply it to something that was in the financial access space, because I just love the idea of getting people access to things that they really need in their life. In this case, estate planning is super important, at a price point that they can actually afford. In this case, free, which is like the best price point. But that was really compelling to me. And also figuring out how to unlock the inherent generosity in people, being able to help them give when they have the ability to give, was something that was important to me too.
Yeah, I love that. By the way, Ramp, it's the eighth largest privately held company in the United, I think in the world. Like, it's on the top 10.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I saw a thing the other day, like, I don't know how many billions of dollars that company's worth now, but very impressive.
Eric and Kareem are fantastic guys. Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm a very happy client. I actually just onboarded in about 30 days ago. Anyway, separate thing. Back to you. So I know a lot of pilots are listening to this and they're like, you know what? I listened to Tate and Ryan on episode.
Yeah, we've talked about trust and estates on a number of episodes now. First, with Amanda Wijnalda back on episode 114, then with Adam Kinte, particularly on 127, and again on 137 with Adam Kinte talking about revocable living trusts. But Jenny, I really want to talk about probate. We spoke briefly before we hit record here about how every state is different, and it can even be different within states, like in counties and things. I don't think that probate gets talked enough about. What happens if you don't have a will, you don't have a trust, and you just pass away? Because I think it's easy to just think, well, are you kidding me? Like, it would just go to my kids, right? And that's actually not the case.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a common misconception. So a few things to kind of break down in what you said there. The first thing is estate planning laws are hyper-localized. So typically at the state level, folks are going to have different estate planning laws that apply to their situation. And what this means is if you live in California versus you live in Texas, the exact same family with the exact same assets, different things might happen with your assets depending on those estate laws. So that's the first thing to understand. And what that means is what might be the right thing for you to do in your circumstance might be a little bit different in these different states. So I'll give a specific example around that. In Texas, it's really common for folks, even quite wealthy folks, to use will-based estate planning, meaning they don't even do a revocable living trust. They just do a will, healthcare directive, financial power of attorney, bam, 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 they're done. But in other states, like California, probate is so expensive, and we'll go into a little bit of what probate is and why it's expensive and passing away without a will in a sec. California probate is so expensive and takes so long. It can take your beneficiaries up to 6 to 12 months to get anything from your estate because the system is so backed up. Also in California, there are uncapped fees on how much probate can take from your estate. It is highly recommended for many people, if not most people, to do a revocable living trust-based estate plan instead. So that's an example of how the state-by-state variation can really impact estate plans. And one thing we do at Free Will is we do our best to help educate folks who come to our site on, depending on where your address is, here's something that might be helpful to you, more or less helpful. And there are lots of good online resources for that, but that's just one thing to notice about estate planning. In fact, on Free Will, California is actually the only state where we actually offer revocable living trust for free for everyone too, just because it is so hard to get through that probate process. We don't want anyone to end up in a rough spot. So that's the first thing.
What is probate for those that aren't tracking?
Great question. So the way that I think about it is estate planning is what you do while you're still alive to plan around your death. So these are getting all your legal documents in place, making sure they're all signed so that after you pass away, there's basically a set of instructions that goes to the probate court and your loved ones on what you want to happen to your assets and medical decisions if you are incapacitated, et cetera. So that's kind of everything before. Probate is everything that kind of happens after. So it's a little bit of a catch-all term to say, after you pass away, suddenly all of these things get triggered. Probate court itself is a local court that's responsible for figuring out what should happen with your assets. And usually there are, I would say, three different things that would happen in probate. The first one is you pass away without any will, right? This is called dying intestate. So you don't have a will, you don't have a trust, you don't have any instructions on what to do. This is the most complicated case of probate because probate has to apply the general estate laws on what happens, and then they have to solicit a bunch of who are all the creditors, where are all your assets, who are all the potential beneficiaries. It is a super long process that the court has to go through step by step to make sure they have identified everything around your estate and that the money gets distributed properly according to the state laws. So almost always, intestate is going to be the longest and most complicated process for your beneficiaries to go through. So even though it may be the case that your, you know, children, for example, do end up getting your assets, they are getting it way later and in a much hairier process where they had to do a lot more paperwork and show up to the court and all this really annoying stuff that they might not have had to do if you actually had left instructions on what you wanted, even if they're basic instructions. So most attorneys are going to tell you that it is never a good idea to pass away intestate. So that's one path of what could happen in probate. The second path of what could happen in probate is you have an estate plan and it is a largely like will-based estate plan. And so now you have left instructions, super helpful to the probate court. Their responsibility is making sure that this is a valid will. This is like a real document that you signed, you know, and that it's the latest one, the last will and testament. The reason why the last word is there is because it's only your last one that counts. You could write 20 documents, sign them all, and only the last one will matter. So they want to make sure it's real. They want to make sure it's the last one, that this is really your intent. And then once they establish that those things are true, great. They're going to like follow those instructions and make sure that everything's kind of passed to the proper people. So that's going to be usually a less painful process than a testament. Then you have a third part of probate, and this is when you've allocated most of your assets through trusts. And in this case, anything that travels through your trusts typically won't be part of the probate process. It's actually just going to transfer directly through that trust structure that you created, and that's going to create some efficiencies, right? So instead of the probate court having to verify all of these assets and make sure that they're monitoring, making sure it can pass to everyone, actually, things just distribute according to your trust, and it's your trustee's job in order to make sure that all of that gets distributed properly. Now, that sounds great. And you would say, shouldn't everyone do a trust? That feels like the most efficient process. Well, the real answer is even trusts that are very helpful might not be the right answer for everyone. And the reason for that is that trusts take maintenance. You have to make sure that your assets are constantly retitled to be in the name of the trust. You have to make sure that the trust structure is exactly what you want it to be, because it's not going to have that oversight of the probate court to make sure that everything is all buttoned up. So for many folks who I would say are wealthier, trust can make a lot of sense. It keeps your assets out of probate court. It keeps your estate situation more private because the probate process, those first two that I talked about, intestate and going through will-based, those are public processes. People actually see where your assets are going to have that accountability. But if you don't want that, then you might want to choose a trust route instead. Just know that it does take money and time and thought and responsibility to keep those trusts updated over time.
That's the best explanation I've ever heard. That's fantastic.
I was going to say the same thing.
I'm so glad it's helpful.
Like, it's kind of like you do this for a living. So, Jenny, your company, obviously, freewill.com, the free will itself is what you provide. But what I was trying to ask, you know, because we've had all these trust and estate planners on here, you don't actually do the living trust part of it, do you? With the exception of California?
We do the revocable living trust part in California for free for everyone. But for other states, while we do offer revocable living trusts, it has to be through one of that, the business part of what I talked about. So if it's sponsored by a local nonprofit or, you know, we work with local financial advisors, they'll offer those living trusts and even more complicated trusts actually that we help them build. But the average user wouldn't be able to find that on freewill.com.
Well, and that links up perfectly. I mean, we've had Nevada Corporate Headquarters on a couple times, Adam Kinte, which if you haven't listened to those episodes, highly recommend you go back. We have talked about, even if you're going to do a trust, you should also have a will. Those things really go hand in hand.
Yep.
Jenny, do you want to talk a little bit just briefly about why that's the case?
Yeah. So typically when you have a trust structure set up, you're going to have what's called a pour-over will. And it's really the catch-all for, I didn't put these assets into the trust, so they don't have specific instructions on what's going to happen to them. So that pour over will is going to catch everything else. Things that are as basic as, you know, there's like a piece of jewelry or whatever that you just bought and you like didn't title into the trust. It's going to catch those assets and give instructions as to what happens to them. And typically the will is going to say something like, put those assets into the trust and then have the trust distribute them. But the will part is still going to be part of the probate process. But because it's such a small part of your estate, it's just going to be a lot faster to process than if it also was the will is taking care of your entire house and all of your property and your cars and all of that.
This is a very small and minute question, but jewelry. You know, I've always thought about real estate, cars, boats, assets, like those are the things that you title into a trust. Like you have a title to a piece of real estate or to a car. You don't necessarily have title to a piece of jewelry. Do those things ever get put into a trust or is that all just captured in a will?
Yeah, sometimes if it's really important to you to have a particular piece of jewelry or a piece of art, for example, titled to the will, those are things that you typically can do, but oftentimes you don't, right? If it's like a $500 pair of earrings, that's nice, but are you really going to change your trust every time you buy a pair of earrings, right? Probably not. And so that's the responsibility of that pour over will to kind of catch everything else. You know, your bikes, your really nice plant that might be worth $1,000, right?
Watches, right?
Watches, I was watches. Just going to say, right?
That's right. Are you going to title every single watch in? Exactly. Probably not.
Well, and how would you even title a watch into a trust? I don't even, what's that process? I mean, how
that
do you-
That is beyond my area of expertise.
Okay. Yeah. So that was where I was going with it. Like, how do you title a piece of jewelry or watch into a trust? Okay. Got it. So that's where the will kicks in. This is really interesting. These are the little things we like to pull on to really just get a wide cast foundation of education here. This is fantastic.
I guess like the playbook here then, Jenny, like two things, freewill.com, because I love the business and we love the opportunity to speak with you. Maybe it makes sense to make a will through your platform and then bring it to like a living trust, revocable living trust planner and kind of have sort of the pour over will sort of ready to go and then work with an attorney on your revocable living trust. Because this is like a lot of our listeners, right? They're making good income now. They're acquiring assets. They're making investments, things like that. And then the other kind of offshoot of that would be maybe like, you know, some of our listeners have parents that haven't, you know, talked through, you know, the will or whatever they have for their folks. So maybe they would, is that kind of what you think would be kind of two, you know, reasons why our listeners would really be like, you know, why they should run to your website and check it out? What are your thoughts?
Yeah. So you're kind of getting at a question we get often, which is, do online estate planning services make sense for me? And we're not the only ones, right? Like LegalZoom's out there, Rocket Lawyer's out there. There are other services that you can go to get an online estate planning plan done. We're the only ones that offer a comprehensive set for free, but still, nonetheless, you could pay $99 or $200 and get a set complete. So to answer that question, I would say a few things. And first, obviously, I want to disclaim, I'm not a lawyer. I'm not giving legal advice. I'm not a financial advisor. I'm not giving financial advice. But these are kind of general rules of thumb for how I would think about using an online estate planning service versus going to see an attorney. So the first thing I would say is, oftentimes it does correlate to wealth or assets, right? In terms of if you are complex enough to want to see an attorney. And that's also going to be a little bit dependent on what state you live in. So like we said earlier, estate planning laws are different state to state. There are certain states where estate tax thresholds are very low. Washington State is a good example. I think Oregon is one that has a pretty low threshold. These are states where even if you have above, call it $2 million of total net worth, inclusive of your house and all your liquid assets, you are going to get charged an estate tax on your estate after you pass away. Typically in these cases, we say, if you're a significant amount above that, these estate taxes can get pretty high, 20, 30, 40%. Very different from the federal estate tax threshold, which is like $26 million, where you have to have a lot more wealth to fall into those buckets and be charged estate tax at the federal level. There are some states that have these much lower estate tax thresholds. This might be a good reason to go see an attorney because they can help you structure. It's not actually a revocable living trust. That's not going to help you with any sort of tax optimization, but things like irrevocable trusts or other sorts of structures that are going to help you do tax optimization. That would be one really good reason to go to see an attorney instead of using an online source. But there are other states like Texas that don't even have an estate tax. So, you know, in that case, it doesn't really, until you hit that federal estate tax threshold of $26 million as a couple, you might be fine, right? Not having to go to see an attorney to do this more like tax optimization piece. So that's one thing to think about. Another thing to think about is there are folks who might have special needs in their families. So let's say you have a kid who has special needs and needs like a very specialized trust created for them. Let's say you have closely held assets, you're a business owner. Let's say that you have property spread across multiple states, or even you have a spouse or a family member who's an immigrant, might have like a green card or might have assets in another country. These are all really good reasons to go see an attorney. One thing that we discovered early on in our journey with free will is because we don't make money off of the average consumer, as opposed to some of these other websites, we have no incentive to drive someone to do online estate planning when it is not a good fit for them. And for many people, like I mentioned in these buckets, it's not a good fit for you. Like, go see an attorney. They're going to help you structure the right thing for you and your family. And that's really, really important to us. What drives us is access to estate planning and charitable giving. And neither of those things are going to happen in the right way if you don't get the right estate plan for you. So you should go see an attorney. And one thing we try and do on Free Will is we actually flag and educate people on the way. Hey, you mentioned you're in Oregon. You listed out your assets. We notice it's above the tax threshold. You might want to go see an attorney instead. And we actually help people along the process say, you know, we are gently nudging you out of this process if you would like to do so, to go see an attorney because we don't think it's the best fit for you. So I do think there are many circumstances in which online estate planning isn't a good fit. All that said, if you are pretty straightforward estate, you want to leave most things to your kids, maybe a little bit to charity, you aren't in a state with a low estate tax threshold, or you're below that estate tax threshold, you know, you have like 500K of net worth, this is a great resource for you to be able to do it for free instead of paying $5,000, $10,000 to go see an attorney to get it done. And by the way, you can also update it for free over time too. And we make that process really easy. Once you create an account, if something about your life changes, you want to change your allocations, no problem. Go back to your account. Instead of doing the whole process again, just change the few things that you want to change, print it out again, sign it. You have a legal and valid estate plan and you are set. So we really think it's useful for many people, but not all people. And it is our job as an online platform to help folks kind of identify what is a good fit for them. I'll just say one more thing on this point, which is when we do send folks to attorneys, one thing that we do that's really nice is we actually create a set of documented wishes. All the work and thought that you put into creating your estate plan, you answered a bunch of questions, you thought about who would be a good executor or guardian, et cetera. You can print out all those notes and take them to a lawyer, and then they don't have to charge you per hour to ask you the same questions. And so that can still help too.
100%.
Fantastic. What a cool business that you've created here.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I just love this. I'm going to go do it because, you know, NCH has done all of our living trusts, but I don't have a will yet and I need to get one. And I think it'll help to guide some of the thoughts and discussions that I'm having with my wife. This is great. I absolutely love this.
Another thing that it might be useful for, again, if you have all your trust squared away, is if you need an updated medical, like healthcare directive or durable financial power of attorney, folks don't talk about these forms as much because it's not as sexy as distributing your assets. But man, is it so important to just have a legal document saying, if I am sick, this is the person who gets to make decisions about what happens with my body. Or like, if I am sick, this is the person who can access my bank accounts and pay my rent so that I don't get kicked out while I'm in the hospital. So these are super important documents as well, and also available for free in all 50 states.
Incredible.
Yeah, that I'm so glad you brought that up. That's so important because, you know, something could happen. You know, I mean, we're pilots, right? So like, we're out there and, you know, there could be tragedies that strike and all of a sudden we're in this situation and it's like, oh, I wish I would have taken the time and written out the plan of what actually, who controls what and things like that. I'd love to change the conversation a little bit to the giving part.
Yes.
And really focus on that because I do think it's really important to be, you know, giving, right? And I mean, dedicating our time, dedicating our resources to things. I don't have any specific direction in way this in where I want this to go, but I know, Jenny, you've got lots of thoughts on this. Can you kind of talk us through like where people give, how do people give, like give us some inspiration, you know, because I think this is such an important thing as we get wealthier and we think about what we can give back. Even when we're not wealthy, we donate our time and our energy and our efforts to things. What do you see? What trends do you see? What are kind of some ideas to inspire?
Yeah. I love this question. And I agree, we just don't talk about it as much, in part because it's part of these finances and money, and it's so personal. So just a few thoughts that might help guide folks, especially folks who are thinking about charitable giving for the first time. So the first thing, and I'm a math girl, so I'm always talking in data, is many folks, you know, decide it isn't a good time in their life to give. But then once they get to the point where they do decide that they want to give, it is actually a really hard decision to figure out who to give to and how much. Like, these are really hard decisions. So the first thing is, if you're in that boat and you're kind of thinking, charitable giving sounds interesting, but I don't really know where to start, you are not alone. So one thing that we find, for example, on our website is when folks are doing charitable giving, they have the option to kind of write in charities, or we give some default options that help folks search amongst different categories of causes. And something like 50% of folks pick these default causes, oftentimes because they don't have a prior idea of like which specific nonprofit they want to give to. So it's totally normal to be like early on in your process of thinking about charitable giving. The second thing I would say is, typically when folks are thinking about charitable giving and we're having charitable giving conversations with folks, they'll start with kind of a cause area that they're passionate about. That's a much easier place to start than just looking at a giant database of 1.5 million nonprofits, which is how many nonprofits there are in the US, right? Super intimidating. How am I possibly going to pick? Is to just start with, you know, is it veterans causes that I care about most? Is it health related causes? Is it education? Is it animal welfare? Is it international development? In our website, for example, we have 7 or 8 big categories that most folks will fall into in terms of causes that they care about. So that's the second thing, which is like, start with the cause. And then the third thing I would just say is there are some really great online resources, whether folks are just using, you know, the web or they want to go to their favorite AI tool to say, hey, these are some causes that I care about. What are some high impact causes? And what you find is there are a lot of, for example, foundations who all day long, all they're doing are like vetting different nonprofits, and they're spending a lot of money and a lot of resources researching which of these nonprofits are going to be kind of highest impact within a cause area. And a lot of those resources are made accessible to everyday givers like you and me in order to help us figure out where do we want to put our money in a way that's like really meaningful. So, you know, many of your listeners are going to have a cause that has really helped them in their life. Like, maybe they did the YMCA growing up and that really influenced them, or maybe they went to a certain college or even technical school that like really meant a lot to them and they want to give back. That's great. But if you're one of those folks who like doesn't have a specific place in mind, it is totally okay to kind of borrow someone else's brain and research and hard work and say, hey, you know, here are some well-supported nonprofits that do great things in this cause area. And then the last thing I would say about charitable giving is just don't let the fear of making a wrong decision prevent you from making any charitable decision at all. These are changeable decisions. Every year you can give to different nonprofits, like even giving a little bit, whether it's 1% or 5%. A lot of people use 10% of their, you know, post-tax income as a threshold. I think this is a holdover from the tithing days as a good benchmark, but just start dabbling a little bit. And over time, I think you'll see that you're creating a lot of impact, even with a small decision that you make one year.
It's amazing.
I think this is so important. And, you know, we were talking about this before the show that we don't talk on this show enough about giving. And I think one of the most beautiful things about wealth creation is that it's not a zero sum game. And just because someone is creating wealth and building wealth for themselves, it doesn't mean that they're taking it away from someone else. And that's the beauty of a capitalist economy. I've used this example in the past of, you know, if I spend or Ryan spends the summer fixing up an old car, that is creating value, right? And it isn't just because I made a car nicer than it was, an old classic, right? And I spent $20,000 fixing it up and make it beautiful, and now it's worth $100,000. That didn't take money out of anyone else's pocket, right? It actually helped to, you know, generate economic impact for the seller of the cleaning products that I bought and the parts that I bought. And as society builds wealth, there is the opportunity to give back. And you'll find that the wealthiest people in the world are also some of the most generous, I should say. For someone who hasn't approached for a lot of pilots, like we said earlier, you know, we went through a bit of a rough patch back there in the 08 cycle and the 2000 cycle. Pilots are doing pretty well now. And if people are sort of approaching this nonprofit space for the first time, what do you say to somebody that might be a little bit cynical and say, well, I heard, you know, 90 cents on every dollar goes to the nonprofit's, you know, infrastructure, and only 10% actually reaches the end user, essentially. What sort of data do you have behind that? And is there a way to cut through the noise and look at what nonprofits are actually delivering those dollars to where it matters?
Yes. Great question. So there are some great web resources like Charity Navigator or Candid that actually help you see which nonprofits are spending how much on what's called overhead. So this is what you're talking about, Tate, which is how much is going to people sitting in offices or being recycled into I'm sending out mailers to ask for more money.
Mailers, as opposed to TV advertisements.
Totally. As opposed to actually creating the impact on the ground. Like, how much of my dollar is actually going to go to the area that I thought was going to create impact? And so there's some really good resources on that online to say, like, hey, some of these are one-star charities because it seems like 100% is just going to, you know, the folks sitting in the office, or maybe even worse, like maybe just one person. Like, there are nonprofits that are not legitimate nonprofits. So I would definitely say, go in and do that check. That said, the vast majority of nonprofits are not in that boat. And we work with nonprofits all day long, from local animal shelters, local libraries, faith-based organizations, all the way up to the United Way and the, you know, World Wildlife Funds of the world. And by and large, the folks working at these nonprofits are just so diehard about their mission. Like, they are doing everything they can to make the most of this money. And typically every year it's like really struggling budget cycle to budget cycle to say, we don't have very much. How are we going to make the most of it? So also say, one, they're good resources. Two, most folks are good actors. And especially I would say, if you're giving away a decent amount of money, it is not crazy to reach out to the nonprofit and actually ask them some of these questions, like do a little bit of diligence, right? Like, help you understand, you know, how are they using this money for impact? And if you're not satisfied with the answers, don't do it, you know? So like, I think that there is increasingly kind of a savvy consumer mindset around how folks are thinking about their charitable giving. And there absolutely should be.
Which ones do you think are the best? What are your top three? If you're allowed to say.
Yeah, this is like, This is picking between children. I've actually never been asked this question at a public venue. So
well, you heard it here first, I guess, right?
Heard or it maybe, here first.
Maybe, right. Yeah, maybe, or maybe we won't. I don't know. We'll see.
Well, I'll say this. I have lots of favorites, but an area that I've always been passionate about is kind of the international development space. I think, as I mentioned, my parents immigrated from China. They came with like $20 in two suitcases, the classic immigrant story. Yeah. And during the Cultural Revolution, they were very, very poor. And I grew up going back to visit China a lot. And the village that my mom grew up in, like literally there are still people like pooping in holes and sleeping on rocks. Like it is not a good situation. And so for me personally, those causes really resonate. And I know that one American dollar goes a long way in, you know, buying coal or helping someone invest in a goat or whatever it is, like a malaria net in sub-Saharan Africa. Like, so causes like, you know, Give Directly or the one supported by Give Well, those are a couple organizations that I really like in the international development space. I really love and support. That said, do I also give to like education causes? Totally. Do I think like a bunch of healthcare causes are totally noble? Yes. So like, it's really, really hard to pick favorites, but I'll just put a little plug in for folks who are thinking about international poverty.
I like it.
I love it. Thanks for sharing. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah, no problem.
So tell us more about how these nonprofits plug in with freewill.com.
Yeah. So it's totally optional is the short of it. So anyone going through freewill.com can create their will, revocability trust if they're in California, and distribute their assets. They can give it all to their kids and friends, or they can give some of it to charity. So we make it easy to kind of find charities that are applicable, whether they're local charities or kind of in various cause areas, and just help narrow down those options to be like a handful of charities that are applicable in that area that we've already vetted to be like, you know, high star ratings in Charity Navigator, they're not scams, all those sorts of things. But you don't have to give to the causes that we list. You don't have to give to any causes if you don't want to. But we find that just by asking, the giving rate on our site is something like between 4 to 6 times higher than the national average. And that's just because we ask, because we make it easy to give to charity. And that was a huge unlock for us in the early days of Free Will, because it told us, it's not that folks are inherently generous. It's that the system of making an estate plan is too hard. And the system of figuring out where to give is too hard. And if we just make those things a little bit easier, folks will be incredibly generous if and when they're able to.
Now, if I'm listening to this and I'm actually a nonprofit or I volunteer at a nonprofit and I want to list on your platform or get connected into freewill.com, how does that work?
Yeah, you could reach out to me. I'll send you to someone on my team, but I'm Jenny at freewill.com. We have an amazing team of almost 200 folks, mostly here in the US, who spend all day thinking about how do we help nonprofits raise more money. Part of it is through estate plans, but we actually also help nonprofits with things like public stock donations, crypto donations, kind of these other hard, sticky, but tax efficient ways to give. And so we help nonprofits figure out, how do we accept these types of gifts? How do we talk about them with our donors in a way that's like super easy for everyone and make the amount that a nonprofit has to invest in order to start one of these fundraising programs a lot lower than if they had to hire someone with this expertise?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. So like stock giving, I mean, is this something that people can do right now through your platform?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have a site that allows people to donate public stock to nonprofits. If you go to freewill.com, it's just a small kind of part of it that you could find. And we also make it free for anyone to give crypto to nonprofits. So we actually eat all the fees and processing and allow anyone to give to any nonprofit that's verified in our system for free using crypto. Both of these assets are tax advantage to give. And I'll kind of explain why that is. If you're giving a gift of cash, that's going to be out of your post-tax money, right? You've already paid your income taxes on it, maybe your cap gains taxes on it, so that you can have cash in your pocket so that you can give. And that's how most people give, is like cash, credit card, check. It all falls in this kind of post-tax bucket. But if you give a gift of appreciated stock, there are two tax bonuses that you get. The first tax bonus that you get is, let's say that you bought Apple when it was $10. And if so, kudos, and I'm really happy for you. And that's awesome. So you bought in really early. And now it's appreciated to many times more than that. Let's just say for round numbers, like $1,000 per share. Well, if you were to sell that stock and then donate part of your proceeds to the nonprofit, then you would pay capital gains on the appreciation of that stock. And then you would get a tax benefit for however much your proceeds that you sent to the nonprofit were. So that's the less tax advantage way to do it. Okay, now let's say you're trying to do it the tax savvy way. Here are the two bonuses you get. First, if you donate a public stock directly to a nonprofit, you do not have to pay cap gains tax on it. And second, you get the total amount of that write-off as a benefit for your taxes.
Yes.
So it's like, so not only amazing. Does a nonprofit get more, but you also get a bigger deduction, and you have not changed how much you've changed your net wealth, right? So both of those things are a benefit.
And I assume the nonprofit gets the step up in basis.
That's right. So the charity isn't paying taxes either. So like it's doubly tax benefited.
That's a really good trick.
Yeah. So that's true of public stock, private stock. It's true of crypto that's appreciated. We've actually seen a big uptick in people giving crypto gifts because of all the appreciation in Bitcoin and Ethereum over the last 10 years. Yeah. So true of any of those assets. And if you're getting even, you know, more fancy with things, if you have privately held stock, you can actually also donate that and get those tax benefits. Any assets that have appreciated and you're going to pay cap gains on, those are good candidates. But obviously, the more esoteric you get, it's a little bit harder to give.
Right. That's incredible. I didn't know that. That's really cool. And you can donate, you can kind of connect the donations through your site, right? I mean, you can go to freewill.com.
Totally.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yep. And we help you figure out, like, here's the exact right forms that you have to sign. You just fill in the blanks, print sign it, send it to your brokerage, and the money goes off to the nonprofit.
Incredible. Well, we'll have a lot to link to in the show notes here. Jenny, this has been fantastic. Any other wisdom that you'd like to leave with us today?
No, I don't. I love talking about these topics. And maybe the last thing I'll leave the audience with is, you know, the typical user on our site to make a basic will spend 30 minutes on it.
Wow.
30 minutes is not that much time to avoid an intestate process and make sure that things follow exactly your wishes. And like I said, we don't handle every complicated case. And there's certainly folks who spend many hours on it, but the average case is about 30 minutes. So I would just say, if you have 30 minutes to spare on a Saturday, and let's say it's like you and a parent, sit down with them on a couch, be like, I know you don't want to think about this, but let's just get this over with. Rip the Band-Aid off. And
it costs you nothing.
Try it for free.
Yeah.
And take care of business. You're
amazing.
Future self will thank you for it.
Well, you've got an absolutely amazing service that you're offering to the world. So thank you for building this. And thank you for sharing your time with us. This has been incredible.
Thanks, Tate. Thanks, Ryan.
You're welcome. Good seeing you. Thanks for tuning in this week. Catch you on the next one.